Batista versus Kennedy. Mr. Kennedy. Kennedy is your SmackDown title match. I might be the last guy on this ship. I thought Kennedy had a lot of potential. He did himself no favors.
You said so on the SNS show back in the day. Okay. You did say
that. He did himself no favors.
I know you sometimes have to be reminded of what you said.
Yes, I do. But I was pretty clear. I thought his in-ring work was not great by any means. I thought he was a good promo, which helped.
That's true.
He was the gimmick of Kennedy, and doing his own ring introductions
right.
was strong. Now, what was not strong was the build for him here as the number one contender. Do you know what gimmick I hate? I had to look this up to see how he got this title match,
mm-hmm.
Truth be told. I hate the beat the clock challenge.
Those are bad.
Because
it's always the last guy.
Well, no. They did it differently here.
Okay.
But the thing is, they're always short matches. The matches are always like shorter than they would be.
Right.
So, and it always buries the guy who isn't going to win.
Well, and that's the thing, too, because, yeah, it's a clear delineation between the haves and the have-nots.
Now it is more. Here it was, okay, well, so what they did is they had Kennedy beat Benoit in like 5 minutes and change.
Right.
Undertaker was going to beat Miz, and the perception was, oh, my God, this will take no time at all. Well, Kennedy came in, and I guess it was like a good heel move, if you're trying to build him as a heel. He came in, and he kind of kept doing things to delay the pin to the point that Undertaker didn't beat him at the same time. I guess that's okay.
Right.
But the problem was, and they kept hyping Kennedy as having beaten six former world champions.
I wanted to talk about
that. But they were
always
weak wins.
Right.
It was like, I think he had beaten The Undertaker in some cheap way in a First Blood match.
Right.
They were always just kind of cheap pins. You get the feeling that he wasn't, again, it's so funny when you look at how they booked Triple H, and look, I'm not meaning to turn this into a Triple H bitch fest, but there's no doubt, and there can be no denying, that when it comes to booking a strong heel, the way he was booked compared to like every other heel in the history of this company is so different.
Right.
Like, he actually got clean wins and was made to look really strong. Everyone else just never gets that treatment, and I think it hurts, although I'll say this. By the end of this match, people are chanting for Kennedy against Batista, which I think was a testament to the fact that there was something to this guy. Now, he made an idiot out of himself by claiming he didn't do steroids, and he gets caught like 2 minutes later.
Right.
And then he got hurt. And then what really hurt him was the injury that wasn't, when they freaked out. He had won Money in the Bank later in the year. They thought he was going to be out for months. They had him job his Money in the Bank contract out, and then he like was ready to come back a month later.
And the last straw was becoming a political enemy of Randy Orton, just having Orton blame him for an injury.
By then, I think his goose was almost kind of cooked.
I really think
when he went on TV and was like, I never do steroids. Anyone who thinks wrestlers do steroids is an idiot. And then he gets busted.
But I want to mention something
what was that,
else.
The Signature Pharmacy thing.
Signature Pharmacy late summer, early fall 07. Yeah. I want to mention something else here in regards to Randy Orton to back up what you just said about Triple H. Because you're right. The Triple H push in 99 was the gold standard for getting over a heel, 99-2000. But, you know, somewhere on the next tier, way further back, but on the next tier, 2005, Randy Orton, legend killer. Although I guess it was also 03, 04, now that I think about it, 05 was a reprise when they put him with The Undertaker. I guess the original one was 03, 04.
He was better booked in 03, 04.
You're right. I'm thinking of the second half of the legend killer run. But anyways, this whole thing of, like, beat six former world champions, this should be something where you use that to establish somebody who is going to be a permanent main event slash upper mid-card player, as opposed to, for a one-off, the guy gets beat at the Royal Rumble and back to the mid-card.
Well,
you're wasting.
Here's the thing. They did
six
have,
former world
in their
champions.
Defense,
yeah.
In their defense,
yeah.
They did have big plans for him. He was supposed to be the illegitimate son of Vince McMahon.
Okay.
They had big plans. I think he was supposed to work against Triple H at WrestleMania 24.
Okay.
Because it was going to be revealed that Triple H was in the family. They had very big plans. And this is part of the issue you see with the brand extension.
That's right.
You need to have contenders for these title matches. You now have three of them. And they had to have somebody challenge Batista here that was kind of over but wasn't going to win. You know, they did protect Kennedy in the booking here. There was a spot where he had Batista beat, but the ref was out.
Right.
So, I mean, they didn't bury Kennedy by any means, and they quickly rehabbed him by having him win Money in the Bank, and he announced he was going to challenge at WrestleMania 24 for the title, which I thought would have been a great storyline, but alas, it never worked out. The match itself was kind of sloppy. Again, I said
right.
Kennedy was a good promo. His work left a lot to be desired. And Batista, quite frankly, you know, his strength was never between the ropes.
Well, he's also, and I watch him, as I'm rewatching his matches, I find out that maybe I was a little bit hard on him in this respect, but I've always felt
he was
like,
capable of having good matches.
But to me, he's not a particularly graceful moving big man.
No,
would you
he
agree
is not.
With me? Okay. Yeah. I mean, like, which the one thing that I always bring up whenever you harsh on Glenn Jacobs is that, like, I always say, like, that guy is butter for a guy of his size. He moves. He flows in the ring.
Well, I'm not disputing that. I'm just disputing the fact that he's been around for
so long.
Right.
But, like, Batista, like, every time he takes a bump,
he didn't
or whatever,
have an athletic background. Batista,
right. His coordination kind of takes me out of it a little bit.
Yeah, and there just seemed like to be a lot of sloppy transitions
right.
in this match. You know, there was a lot of working the knee. We should put out John Bradshaw Layfield now, a commentator here.
That's right.
He was amusing during this time period.
Well, and he was, you talk about that with protecting Batista in the booking. Kennedy. I seem to remember that he was harping on that a lot.
He was.
He was totally jocking Kennedy.
You could totally tell that they had Kennedy earmarked for something after this, which is fine. And again, it's kind of what I think kind of hurts the WrestleMania 23 legacy
right.
in that two of the guys that they were looking to promote long term and move up the ladder,
absolutely,
he and Lashley,
right,
I'm not doing anything. As for Batista, I don't think this did anything for him.
It didn't. You know, but you compare and contrast these first two matches with the third of the big title matches, the WWE title match, the last man standing with Umaga and with Cena, and that was an excellent match.
Yes.
I don't know what you thought. Like, in terms of psychology,
I thought it was outstanding.
I thought it went on too long.
They had
like death spots in like the middle of the match. Like, how do you keep going after all of this?
Yeah, you know, I've seen other last man standing matches where they teased falls a lot more than they did here. They had this everything. There was just not a lot of waste in this, I didn't think. They didn't wait. Like, every spot seemed to mean something. I don't think it went long at all.
It did, but I thought it was over Bookamania just in terms of, like, there are so many. You don't want to have the suspension of disbelief of, like, okay, he should be dead after that. And I felt like there were three or four of those things before the final pinfall. It felt excessive to me. It didn't feel like a build to the final pinfall, as opposed to this one randomly gets the three count, as opposed to when
there was no three count. He choked him out.
Or choked him out, yeah. I mean, but as opposed to before when he ran him over with a bulldozer and he still got up at the count of 10, you know?
I didn't see. I mean, there was the spot where he was going for the FU, Cena, I guess, and he fell face first on the stairs and he got busted open. That worked. There was blood here.
First instance I remember of the throne steps out of the ring by Cena. He did
that with
Umaga.
I liked that spot. That was very good.
Yeah.
He was selling the abs the whole time from the angle on Raw where Cena splashed into the table.
And at least Cena bleeds. We talk about this as the tail end of the era before PG. Thank God that this was still an era you could bleed.
Well, they were doing things here where blood was kind of a necessity.
Yes.
The issue is you don't need blood to necessarily get over, because I've seen plenty of stuff
but
in wrestling
helps.
Get over. Well, here's the thing. You can't – what they do sometimes now is they do things that you're conditioned to think, okay, the guy should bleed, and then he doesn't.
Right.
And that's where I think it hurts. But, okay, so you had that thing with Cena, and it led to him bleeding, which was fine. You did have the thing where he smashed the TV monitor against Umaga's head
right.
in the post. And Umaga got up, but it was selling what a monster Umaga was.
We've come a long way since Johnny Valentine Less Is More, let me tell you.
Well, unfortunately, you know, you people who expect so many things, and the bar, you know, it's funny. How many times do you watch a ladder match now or a table match or one of these gimmick matches? You're like, oh, geez, these were more violent back in the day.
Like, if
and people bitch about that.
Any number that you talked about this before, the one spot during the match here with the Hardys and Eminem. How many separate spots were there in this match that if they occurred just randomly on, let's say, a Jim Crockett Promotions show in 87, the guy would have been out 6 months? You know what I mean? The psychology here.
I thought
and that's the wrestling I came up on.
Yeah, but I thought the psychology here was actually quite good. I thought it was just what you've come to expect. Because here's the difference. In 06,
mm-hmm.
the you know, the cat's out of the bag, so to speak, and the audience has an expectation for what a Last Man Standing match is.
Right.
And I think this, for me, I'll be very blunt with you, this is a turning point match for me with John Cena in evaluating his career. This was his first great match.
A lot of people have said that.
Now, I give this 4.25 stars. There aren't a lot of matches that we've watched so far that have been better than this. The only ones that I've seen better are the obvious ones. Triple H Foley, Angle Benoit, and Jericho Benoit.
I'm more around 3.75, but I mean, that's still...
Well, hate Cena, so that's not surprising.
No, not even that. I will tell you this, though. Your point is one that I've seen in a lot of different corners of the web where people have said that they started to kind of come around on Cena a little bit here.
I was shocked watching this live. I remember, again, watching and looking at Ryan saying, this is pretty good.
Having said that, here's what's very interesting. Mr. Cause meet Mr. Effect. I have in my notes here, this is a John Cena match. And this is rare in that era, a big match that the crowd didn't crap on.
No, he didn't. I noticed that. Yeah. You know why? I have here, this dynamic worked a lot better for him, where
exactly.
This is sort of a... Do you know what this was?
What?
This was a modern update of Hulk Hogan Kamala. I hate to say that because
Umaga was.
Kamala. But,
yeah.
You know, it was a more hardcore, better worked version. Because Hulk Hogan Kamala, truth be told, on the house shows... That wasn't terrible stuff. They did stuff in the cage. It was okay.
By the way, speaking
there was also an unbelievable promo, which I've watched one time and I have been on the prowl for ever since, where it appeared Hulk Hogan did all of the cocaine possible and cut this promo where his face was painted like Kamala, and Mean Gene appeared scared for his life.
Yeah, that's
saying. Allegedly.
I vaguely remember that.
It was one of those localized promos.
By the way, in terms of bizarre old school references, JR on commentary throwing out the Bruno Koloff reference. What was that about? At a point in time Bruno was still public enemy number one to the company.
Yeah, he probably just felt like doing it. He liked doing those things. That was probably something he went into business for himself, off script. Well, I noticed that, too.
So you want to do that colon little thing on me, huh, Vince?
I'm going to reference your history of your title. What's funny is Vince was probably more mad at the history reference than JR was about the colon.
Probably. So, and to any other company that would in history, that would be regarded as a good thing, tying into their history.
I can't believe you would only give us 3.75.
Like I said, I just think, again, it took me out of it because they no-sold. And I don't mean no-sold in terms of shook it off. But here's the thing. I mean no-sold in terms of a couple of these spots should have ended the match, no questions asked.
If you watch other Last Man Standing matches, I think you will have seen...
The monitor of the head is the one in particular I was thinking of.
You'll have seen stuff that...
Maybe I need to rewatch more.
Yeah, I think you need to watch more Last Man Standing matches. Because,
okay.
Like, Triple H Jericho, there was a ton of stuff there. There was, like, brutal, like, unprotected chair shots and stuff that weren't ending the match and whatnot. So... Yeah, I think these guys, by 06, there was an expectation for a Last Man Standing match.
Okay.
And these two had to meet that. What am I trying to say here? Old school psychology be damned, then be damned.
Okay. Well, that was pretty much the death of old school psychology in this match.
I think
match,
old school psychology had died before 2006.
Yeah, you're right.
I do not think this match... keeps Jim Cornette up.
You're probably right. He's too busy bitching about Lucha Underground. But on to the main event match itself.
There was a Ric Flair number draw, which was moderately amusing, where all the women came out and started grinding on him.
Yeah, it's funny that we just used the word unprotected in another context a couple of seconds ago but there we go. Lillian ran through the rules again here this year.
Did a lot better job than the previous year.
Yes, yeah. Well, she wasn't interrupted by the Spirit Squad either, so there's that. But they kept, I mentioned this to you off air, they kept harping on this, the most star-studded Royal Rumble in history. Really, brah? Really?
This was not the most star-studded Rumble in history, but what are they going to say?
I mean...
That it's not?
In the first 20 years of it, this would have been the 20th one, I'd say parked comfortably in the middle, off the top of my head. Maybe, just maybe, three stray...
Yeah, I think...
Short and curlies above the middle.
Look,
what?
They didn't have... The Austins or the Rocks, obviously.
Right.
Who largely were the only stars when they won them. In 90, I mean, the thing is, one thing I'll say about this one, compared to some of the previous years we've done, there weren't a lot of the duds in there. Did you notice that? Like, most guys, I'm like, oh, this guy's... There were a few in here. I mean, Kevin Thorne worked. There was The Miz, who was a nothing. But there weren't a ton of guys who were those one-year wonders.
Here's the funny thing, though, I know this is not the way they meant it in, because this is a company that has always done all it can to crap on the real ECW. But the fact that you had RVD in there, Sabu, whatever.
Dreamer, Sandman.
I'm kind of marking out in that way. Like,
of course you are.
Yeah, like yeah. I was liking that. But I still, even in my biased ECW heart of hearts, to me that doesn't make it the most star-studded
No, it was not the most star-studded Rumble ever.
It was not on the level with 02, 92, or probably several other ones after that. Because...
Yeah, I mean, because you didn't have... It was funny because there's some of those Rumbles where they hype, oh, you've got... You know, multiple previous Rumble winners.
Yeah.
This one had, well, you had Benoit was a previous Rumble winner.
Right.
Michaels had won it in the 90s, his
right.
previous run with the company. And that was probably it. Oh. There were. It was interesting watching this because, and you agreed, we've talked about this a little bit off air. This is a really good Rumble, I think. I think it's one of the better Rumbles, actually, ever. Because it's somewhat unique. And if you... I think it'll take you a while. Anyone who's watched it knows what makes this Rumble. It's the ending.
Right.
But if when you're watching through it, you're probably, if you've never seen this before and you just start watching it and you're halfway through, you're like, you're probably sitting there and thinking to yourself, why does everyone think this Rumble's so great? Because I will say this, in the con department, I know you don't like when I start checking off those boxes on the spreadsheet, although we're reviewing a show. I don't know why I wouldn't do that. But... This one didn't really have any, like, angles, or I don't think necessarily anyone got elevated.
Right.
You know, they tried to with, like, CM Punk, this half-hearted elevation. Oh, CM Punk's still in there, but he really wasn't doing anything.
Right.
Like, he didn't eliminate anyone.
Right.
There tended to be a lot of guys in the ring at one time in this for most of it. Never... too many. I think there was a point when they kind of loaded up towards the end to get the fodder ready for Great Khali, who, ironically enough, was one of the better booked guys in this.
Right.
Finley lasting so long was kind of odd to me. Not that I don't like Finley, but he wasn't doing anything
at
that
time. Him and Flair were 1-2, which was, I have in my notes, that's like a random kind of a pairing. Kind of odd.
It was, and you kind of wanted to think it was a big deal. It sort of wasn't, but...
I mean, Finley, at that point, again, he would get over more later in the year, but he still wasn't at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always thought he had a bigger ceiling than they pushed him to as a badass babyface. He's a guy that the crowd really kind of got into, and if they'd have gone with this sort of...
He was old, though, and in their mind, they don't like old people.
If they'd gone with sort of like this poor man's Austin proto-blue-collar ass-kicker kind of a thing.
You just think that you can just... Anyone can be the next Steve Austin.
I saw...
You?
No, not the next Austin, but I saw some Austin-like things as far as him being an ass-kicker the people were getting behind. But it was interesting.
Those episodes.
Well, they did the whole thing of Kenny Dykstra coming out at number 3.
You talk about another guy I might be the only guy on the ship for.
Uh-huh.
I thought Kenny Dykstra had potential.
Oh.
His goose was cooked when Cena cooked his goose, I think, or whatever.
Yeah, didn't he raise a stink about Cena taking Mickey James away from him or something?
Well,
or?
I mean, what, he was better than, you know, I guess Johnny Nitro saying, oh, yeah, just do my girlfriend, Batista.
Well, he lost his push with Vince when that happened. But,
yes. But I thought he had potential.
Sure he had potential. Absolutely.
Remember, he was a young guy. Everyone hated him, though. Didn't
right.
He was one of those guys who kind of no one liked backstage. He was
well, that's the thing, too. Of like, there are guys who you see them on screen, and they do such a good job of playing a dick, and it's because apparently they're just channeling what's inside of them. And that's an old-school thing to do. That's what old-school guys used to do, is just channel what's inside of you. I have in my notes here, too, in terms of early in the match, Matt Hardy at number 4. After his earlier match, you talk about the thinness of this whole thing here. 3 brands, but no depth. But by the same token, the whole thing here, what I will concede, while this wasn't the most star-studded Royal Rumble of all time, they were dead wrong about that. I have in my notes here, especially when I start talking about the ECW, the old school guys here, to me it's a higher floor than some of the last couple of years.
Yeah, that's what
years.
I said. You didn't, with a couple exceptions, like I said, Kevin Thorne,
The
Miz, Viscera is like the love machine.
All right, so I guess I just said it a different way,
there weren't a great number of duds. Like, everyone who came out, you're like, oh, I kind of like this guy.
Right.
But, you know, none of them, it's much different than, say, like, 98 or 2000, where there's this huge juxtaposition with, like, the top star in the match and, like, everyone else.
Right.
Here, it just sort of seemed like everyone was kind of even, and it did make for, I think, a more interesting Rumble in that you really didn't, in the absence of storylines, you just kind of didn't know who was going to win here. I think this was kind of a, what's the word I'm looking for? In theory, like the theory behind the Rumble, this one followed the theory of every man for himself, anyone can win it, that kind of thing. I think this Rumble succeeded on that level. I'll say this. You, the three champions were all baby faces, right?
Right.
The heel side was really weak.
It was.
I mean, you had Edge and Orton, basically, as rated RKO, who were kind of left to carry the heel side.
That was about it, yeah.
Yeah, because it comes down to two baby faces, Undertaker and Michaels. There just was... You think that this is one of those ones that they would have put a young heel in early and had him go long, kind of like... You know, I mean, Ted DiBiase was obviously established long before he did it, 90. Or like Triple H was a guy in 96, even though he really didn't do a it took a while for him to take after that. The Rock in 98, remember? He got in early and went long and stayed until the end.
Right.
This is a Rumble. I think it could have used that because they had some young heels here that they wanted to push, but they weren't really put in, like MVP, for instance. He was kind of like the one... outlier left at the end, but he came in at the end and he just happened to still be there.
Further evidence of what you're saying is when you're talking about the picture of the company at that time, you're talking about Undertaker, Michaels, the last two in the match here. Of course, one of the two world title main events, I refuse to include Lashley and Umaga in that since it wasn't even an ECW title match at WrestleMania. But for the world title, it was Undertaker v. Batista at WrestleMania. So on different cards at different times, they were having to play up Megaface versus Megaface.
And it was Cena versus HBK on the Raw side.
Cena versus, yeah. Oh, you're right.
The two world title matches at WrestleMania were both babyface versus babyface. It was a very parallel build, which we'll touch on in a
absolutely.
Second.
Absolutely. But that's that WrestleMania, you're right about that. And I missed the
and
both
Triple
those matches.
And Triple H was
going to
be a face,
he
by
was
the way,
be a face.
Coming into. So that was another face.
It's a tremendous imbalance.
Yeah, I mean, the heel side was. It's funny here in 2016 when we're recording it.
Right.
Everyone keeps talking how weak the heel side is.
Right.
On WWE. Wasn't it weaker here?
You'd kill today for a guy who is as viable in that spot as early 07 Orton or early 07 Edge. You'd kill for either one of those guys today. They don't hardly have that. Versus who? Yeah. Sheamus? Get out of here with that crap.
The League of Nations?
I
know you don't like Woodrow Wilson. I know you want to underrate all the great things he did for this country, but yeah, they were pretty bad.
Thank God we had Calvin Coolidge to save the country after him. But,
yeah, how'd the economy do?
It was recovering. But but it was an interesting match. It was a thing here. You had corrected me on something previously. I think this was also during the WrestleMania series because I think when
God,
I had
you remember things. What did I correct you? I like hearing when I correct you.
You were right because I got this wrong that Cena, because I said in 08, Cena was the first guy ever to come out at number 30 and it did the surprise thing. You said, no, it was the Taker the year before. I was like, oh, yeah, okay. It was. But here's the thing.
Well, this wasn't a surprise. He was booked to be in the match.
No. And I get that. But the one criticism I have is, you can't, and I realize you and I are taking a different view of this than standard booking because we're looking at this year to year over the course of the history of the company, but I think you have a certain responsibility as a booker knowing that you have to do this year after year after year to not burn something out for no reason. And I feel like there was no reason for Taker to come out at 30. I think you want to limit the number of times somebody wins at 30.
It had never happened.
True.
This was the first thing. Like, to me, I thought, see, I have a completely opposite thing. To me.
But they did it in 2010 with Edge, too, did they not?
No, he wasn't 30.
Oh, he wasn't 30? No. Okay, all right.
Well,
here's the thing. They probably couldn't do it because it would have been 3 and 4 years. Edge at 30 in 2010 would have made a lot more sense, but they couldn't do it.
The Cena thing was a huge surprise, and we'll talk about that when we get to 08.
Yeah.
The whole thing is, number 30 had never won, and I think they really did need to do that because
if they need to win here, I disagree.
I totally
disagree. Save it for when it means more.
Sick of they didn't know what was going to happen the next year. They didn't know. See, the Cena thing at number 30 worked so well.
I'm not saying they knew Cena was going to be out. I'm not suggesting that at all. I'm just suggesting that there are certain things that you should have that you should only use when it really means something.
Well,
I didn't feel like it meant
What they had done too much of before this was
number one or number two.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like they had done it in 06. Remember, I bitched about it. By that point, that kind of hurt that match in my eyes.
It did.
In 06, because I was like, Jesus, we're doing one and two going coast to coast again. Like, and it speaks to the fact how many times they did do it, that they don't do that anymore, really.
Right.
Yes, it is a little, I don't know. It's
unnecessary.
I don't know if it was unnecessary. I just think that, okay, yes, you have a point in that after 20 years of number 30 never winning, number 30 all of a sudden won back-to-back years.
That's right.
And I think that's the only time that 30's ever won is those 2 years, so it's fine.
Okay.
In the mosaic. I don't have a problem with that. I have that in my thing. This is the first time number 30 ever won. And I thought that kind of made for a, I don't think it necessarily helped the match in any way, but it was something that needed to be done to get over the importance of number 30.
Right.
Because quite frankly, I think the luck of the draw had begun to get cheapened by the booking of previous Rumbles where they put stars in early and they had them go coast to coast. We should talk that this is the best ending to any Royal Rumble ever.
It is.
Because that's what makes them. I mean, forget about, there's not a ton that happens that's noteworthy the first two-thirds. Things pick up when Khali comes in, starts tosses a lot of the guys who've been in for a while.
Right.
It's like him, Michaels, Edge, Orton, MVP left. Undertaker comes down at number 30. It winds up being Undertaker and Michaels against Edge and Orton. Edge and Orton are dominating the match.
By the way, we had our obligatory Kane dominance spot.
Yeah, I couldn't remember if he was a face or heel in this match.
He must have been a...
I think he was a face because they did reference an Inferno match with MVP.
Well, not only that, I'm looking here on Wikipedia
with Booker T. Yes,
yeah.
You're right. But I was unclear when he came out.
Okay.
I think by the end of it, I was like, okay, he must have been a face.
Sure.
But when he came out, same thing with Shelton Benjamin, too, was another guy. I couldn't remember what the hell he was doing at the time.
Right. They weren't doing the mama stuff anymore, thank God.
No, that was the year previous.
Yeah.
So it comes down to Undertaker and Michaels. And the spot where they're both, Michaels had been knocked out and out of the ring, comes back in to eliminate Edge and Orton, who were about to do a concerto to the Undertaker. And him and Undertaker, Michaels and Undertaker, both laying side by side. And I remember Ryan going, we were watching this live, going, sit up, kip up, here we go. And it was sweet. And they do, and it's great. It's an absolutely great spot. And it's funny, so many of the other Rumbles, I think 96 was the most extreme example of this, where the time from number 30 coming out to the end is just so brief. It's kind of ridiculous. Here, they finally did something where it's like, okay, number 30 comes out, and then the match goes on for a while after that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost a mini match between Michaels and Undertaker.
Right.
And it really works great. We should mention that this was in San Antonio. Michaels was hometown.
10 years after he won the title back in San Antonio
Alamo
with the
Dome,
Royal Rumble. Yeah.
And Undertaker eventually wins. There was no negativity from the crowd for eliminating a hometown guy. And they really played up that Undertaker, who has never lost at a WrestleMania, was going to now decide who he was going to face. And they were making it, you didn't want to get chosen by The Undertaker. So, again, I think this is one of the better Rumbles ever. I gave it 4 stars, and I think it's maybe a contender for the 3rd best Rumble ever.
I've got it a little closer to the middle of the pack. I gave it 3 stars. I liked the ending part as you did. The one time that the ending was almost sort of a mini-match unto itself, and that's a thing where clearly it planted seeds in their head, because it would be WrestleMania 2 years later and then 3 years later where you'd have the HBK Taker epic series going there. They also brought it back the next month in the whole thing of the Raw main event at WrestleMania versus the SmackDown main event. The February pay-per-view was Cena and HBK versus Batista and The Undertaker. They did that there.
Yeah.
And this is one of the things. This is
softening the brand split.
Yeah. So I say 3 stars. I have this in a tie with 2004 and 1993.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Well, you and I have already established we have different views on
1993. What's funny is I have this very close to 2004, much higher than you. Well, I have both those 4 stars.
Okay. All right. So we both have it in there. Here's the thing, though, and this is something that I said to you off air as well, is that, and this, I don't hold this against the match, but as far as the time period being screwy, one of the things is, much like the previous years, the guys who were there at the end in the match ended up going on to be in a WrestleMania main event anyway.
You mean the non-winner, the runner-up, essentially.
That's what I mean, yeah. That, whoever was in there, and I think it was the last 3 guys in 06 all ended up in main event matches. Because when you watch it now, I mean, and again, and we're watching it through early 2016 eyes, but you're looking at it, you're going Taker and Michaels, and they're playing it up on the screen about the high stakes, the winner goes on to WrestleMania. I'm going, dude, they're both going to be in world title matches.
You know, right.
What I mean?
It does hurt it a little bit.
I think the
whole, you know, you've got to win this match. It does. And there were other instances, I think, of this happening in future Rumbles. And like you said, it happened in the past. And again, it's kind of why I'm choosing to end part five here.
Right.
It's because the brand split gets softer. You just kind of have them doing the same thing on both brands.
Yep.
Now, they ended the brand-only pay-per-views, I believe, in April. I believe Backlash 07 was
the first one that was full-on.
Was full-on.
Both of them. So, although, again, you could make the case that they were still calling it No Way Out, not Elimination Chamber at this point, right? I think it was still No Way Out.
The February pay-per-view was No Way Out.
Okay.
Correct.
So you could make a case, though, because it was Raw only in the main event. It was Cena and HBK making the appearance to wrestle in what was like an exhibition.
No. In 07?
In 07, in February.
Backlash. Oh.
No, February. The No Way Out.
It was a tag match. It was a tag match with the main event. The two Raw guys versus the two SmackDown guys.
That's what I'm saying. So there was only Raw participation in the main event in what was really kind of.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah,
it was.
It was
Cena and Michaels. Raw against Batista and Undertaker SmackDown.
That was the only participation on the whole card, is what I'm saying, for Raw.
Of Raw. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
So
I'm sorry.
It depends on which way you look at it.
April, though,
was full on.
Yeah, April was, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So by the time we get to Rumble 08, it's different.
Yeah.
You've had a full, almost year of the pay-per-views being back to integrated.
Well, and by the way, too, we talked about this before, as far as, and this ties in very directly to the primacy of Raw, to the primacy of the WWE title, to the primacy of John Cena. Once they were all on the same card every month, it was always Cena that had to go out last. So much for, they mean just as much as the other title. No, sorry, they don't.
No, I agree. And it had started, it was an issue that we talked about that, you know,
exactly.
Kind of they had driven home for really a year, going back a year and a half before this. So
overall,
though, I think with two four-star, I guess I liked both the Rumble and the Cena Umaga better than you did.
You did.
I have them both 4 stars or higher. I give this show an absolute thumbs up.
It was a surprisingly inoffensive show for me to watch. You know I don't like this time period at all.
Well,
I don't like it at all.
You're too irredependent. Again,
I'm very irredependent.
If you want to talk about Raws and if you want to talk about Backlashes and you want to talk about other stuff, sure, I'll give you 98 when it comes to that. But when it comes, just because the year 2007 may not have been as strong as the year 1998 doesn't mean that the 2007 Royal Rumble can't be better than the 1998 Royal Rumble, because it is.
It also goes to my enjoyment of it as we're watching it, which is the thing. When I made the joke about spreadsheets and stuff, I mean, spreadsheets and checking off boxes can't tell you how it makes you feel when you're watching it. And that's where,
I mean, I guess nothing really makes me warm and fuzzy, really.
Well,
I mean, to be honest with you, there isn't anything that makes me warm and fuzzy post-1987.
Okay.
I mean, there just isn't. There isn't anything that I'm like, oh, God. You know, I mean, there are things that, like, okay, yeah, I remember the time period. Okay, I was having fun. I was being a knucklehead here. But I don't know. Like, to me.
You know, I guess it just goes to my whole, you know, philosophy of it here. You know, the Les Thatcher, David Allen Coe thing. You know, with
Jesus Christ.
The Hank Williams Jr. song. Can you make folks feel what you feel inside?
That's how
I look at things here. It's about what it makes folks feel inside.
I'll tell you what
Kyle
I felt
Ross.
Inside on the 86 Hank Williams Jr. of the Monday Night Football theme. Glee.
Last thing I had in my notes for this show was that, and another thing, I'd sort of mention this to you off air a little bit, is that you talk about the things in this era. I think that's one of the things that today makes them so caught so flat-footed. Like, OMG, why is everybody so upset about what we're doing in the Royal Rumble? They didn't care all those other years because there wasn't nearly as much at stake from 2003 to the 2013 Royal Rumble, because it was just, you know, hey, nothing's ruled out. Somebody could go wrestle for the other world title. You know, it was always a thing where even after the Royal Rumble, nothing was set in stone. Today, it's pretty much set in stone, a direction going forward. And if people don't like it, they're going to let you hear about it. So that's what kind of makes this a little bit different. It just jumps out at me in that way.
You're right. It is interesting now that with the brands completely done.
It's high stakes, man. Well, you better get it right. You better get it right.
You're right, because you have to establish your one title match coming out of it. And generally, it's pretty predictable, and you're right, it better be good. Whereas here, it's like, okay, if the Rumble winner, if that's not that exciting, well, there's another title match that you can fall back on. There's something else. And they generally loaded up these WrestleManias. Again, I mean, no one match really draws the house anymore at WrestleMania. Right. There hasn't been – they have. I mean, it's been 10 years since they built really around one match at a WrestleMania.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know – What was the last one? Rock Austin 3? Because the next
I wouldn't even say that was
the next closest would have been Taker and Triple H.
No, I would say
how much further back do you have to go?
I would say Triple H Batista definitely had a positive impact on business being the feature match at WrestleMania.
Well,
21.
JBL Cena also was getting pretty strongly pushed going into that.
I don't know. I don't know if that had anything. That was kind of a weak. I mean,
as far as one match carrying a show, do you maybe have to go back to HBK Austin? I think you might.
No. Austin Rock did. I mean, everyone was. That's when Rock, honestly, everyone's like, whoa, this guy can do big business.
Right. But,
Rock Austin 2 at WrestleMania 17.
Right. That's true. Yeah, that did say, you know, but yeah, I guess the point is you have to go way back in time to be able to find, you know, where it was not spread out among a couple of different matches.
Mm-hmm.
So, very interesting. No,
I can tell you what the last bit in Rock Cena at 28. That was clearly, that, what?
You had...
The return of The Rock for those three WrestleManias.
Triple H, Taker, Hell in a Cell.
Rock Cena was head and shoulders above that. Not even close.
You're saying that drew the house disproportionately over an Undertaker streak match?
Yes, not even close.
That's where I disagree. Okay.
I think you're just wrong. Okay. No offense. I think you're just okay. I mean, the three WrestleManias, while two of them weren't very good, that had 28 was the one that was actually good.
Okay.
With Rock back in the fold, The Rock was a clear difference maker business wise.
Yeah, he really was. And these are the drought years here where we're moving towards the end
of the
drought.
Well, this WrestleMania
years.
Did, I mean, tremendous.
Well, the drought of The Rock not being there is what I mean.
Well,
the Rock
when we get
being
to 08, 2010, it's very interesting. I think those are the drought years.
Well, I mean,
frankly.
Like, I just mean in terms of The Rock's presence not being there. We're flat in the middle of the years of where The Rock had nothing to do with the product. And, again, you know, very interesting what they were able to do in this year. You liked the main event, and you liked the WWE title match more than I did. But I grant you, again, this was, you know, again, for as much as I hate this era, I'm not always hating these shows and hating the Rumble matches as much as I thought I would. So I will give you that. But my scores are still coming in below yours because, yes, era dependent. I plead guilty on that. So we start with a new era next time, folks, 2008 to 2010. Do we have a name for that era? Or are we going to have to come up with that before?
I may have to come up with it. Maybe the Kyle didn't watch much from these time, these years, except for Royal Rumble and WrestleMania.
Okay.
Seen all the Rumbles. I've seen them, all of those Rumbles multiple times, but I don't really have, well, two of them are actually really good, the Rumbles.
Okay.
But, you know, I don't have, you know, it's just a weird era overall.
That's
and we'll
right.
get into the reasons why. Then.
It definitely is. We'll get into that and much, much more here with 6A next up in the Royal Rumble when we do 2008. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.